From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Monday, December 11th, and here are today's headlines. The State Department of Health wants Vermont lawmakers to earmark money in next year's budget that would go toward mental health programs for first responders. For the past 2 years, the Department of Health has been using federal grants to pay for a program aimed at improving mental health support for first responders, but that money is running out. Stephanie Bush is with the Health Department and says some of the larger fire, police, and ambulance services have their own programs, but small rural departments often do not.
Regardless of an affiliation, if you are paid or volunteer, if you're a first responder, you should be able to have access to mental health counseling and support.
The department's federally funded program provides counseling after a critical incident and also trains first responders so they can offer peer-to-peer support. The upcoming legislative session starts in January. Roughly 600 acres of land has now been permanently conserved on Victory Hill in the Northeast Kingdom. The land is open to the public and includes much of the viewshed from the popular Victory Hill mountain biking trails. And it includes important habitat for the American marten, a member of the weasel family. Shelby Sims is with the Trust for Public Land, which worked with the landowner to conserve the property. She says protecting large, continuous swaths of undeveloped land is key to help animals migrate north as the climate continues to change.
The Victory Hill Basin, kind of anchored by the Victory Hill State Forest, is a really tremendous biodiversity hotspot in the state of Vermont and really regionally within the Northern Forest.
The Trust for Public Land says it's also looking to conserve nearby land along the Moose River in Concord. That land includes a popular stretch for whitewater paddling. And in other land management news in Vermont, the state government is looking for feedback about a new plan for state land in central Vermont's Worcester Range. The roughly 19,000-acre area includes several hugely popular regions for hiking, mountain biking, snowmobiling, and hunting. It spans the towns of Elmore, Worcester, Middlesex, Waterbury, and Stowe. And it includes Elmore and Hunger Mountains. The area is also home to at least 15 rare or uncommon plants, and the forest is one of the biggest stretches of continuous wildlife habitat in the state. Vermont's Department of Forests, Parks, and Recreation is proposing 13 commercial timber harvests there over about 10% of the land. They also want to control invasive species creeping up from the I-89 corridor. The new plan will decide how the area is managed for the next two decades. Public comment runs from December 13th through February 2nd. You can learn more about the plan at two public meetings, December 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Doty Memorial School in Worcester, or December 19th at the same time at Stowe High School. Avian influenza was found in a small residential flock in Orleans County last week. The state confirmed the presence of the disease through testing, according to a press release from the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. The flock was euthanized Friday by officials from the state and U.S. Department of Agriculture to prevent further spread. There are no reports of the virus in other flocks. The state is asking poultry owners, farmers, and hunters to report sick and dead birds and to review the environmental conditions where their birds are kept, as the virus is deadly for many species. The USDA's website has a free toolkit on how to protect flocks from bird flu. Coming up, a project that could have reduced flooding near a major river by up to a foot failed to materialize. Reporter Liam Elder Connors explains why after this. In the months after Tropical Storm Irene destroyed much of downtown Waterbury in 2011, town officials searched for ways to prevent similar disasters. Experts determined that turning an empty field along the Winooski River into a floodplain could reduce floodwaters by 12 inches. But due to resistance from the property owners, the project was never built. Vermont Public's Liam Elder Connors has more on how the project failed and how it could illustrate challenges for flood mitigation projects all across Vermont.
The 2013 study identified a choke point just north of downtown Waterbury, where the Winooski River couldn't spread out. That caused the water to back up and eventually pour into downtown Waterbury. However, the study found if a field on the river in neighboring Duxbury was lowered, the river could spill onto it more frequently. That would spread out the water and potentially reduce flooding in Waterbury by a foot.
We were thrilled to have a discrete location identified.
Lauren Oates is the former state hazard mitigation officer who worked on this project.
I'm excited to, begin the hard work of working with property owners and discussing more detailed engineering and eventually finding the funds to do that project.
Officials said the project would provide a huge benefit for the relatively modest sum of $3 million, and federal funding would pay for most of it. The Duxbury Field is owned by the Harvey family, who've lived on the adjacent property for more than a century. State officials say the Harveys would have kept their land and either been paid for its use or given another piece of land. But the Harvey family refused to participate.
Personally, I was disappointed in it.
Bill Shepeluk is the former town manager of Waterbury. He says their refusal killed the project.
I'm not trying to lay the blame on the Harveys, but they were not interested at all. So there kind of was just closed doors, so that wasn't explored any further.
Now we'll head down to the boys, and you can see the field from that.
On a recent afternoon, Maureen Harvey was feeding several retired racehorses that live on her family's property. Maureen's father, Jim, bred and trained harness racing horses.
This is Noah. He's probably the fastest horse in the state of Vermont, where he was. He used to be able to do a mile in 1 minute and 52 seconds.
The field where officials wanted to build a floodplain is a pasture for the horses and has a training racetrack. Harvey, who's the Duxbury town clerk and treasurer, says that if the floodplain was built, the field would flood more frequently.
Every spring, it would be filled with sewage and water and mud. It wouldn't be suitable for crops. It wouldn't be suitable for animals to use. So it's basically you take that and make it worthless.
Harvey, while driving me around the family's land, said she's skeptical that the project would have any lasting benefit. And she said that her family was being asked to shoulder an unfair burden.
I mean, how would you feel if you were told that everything that you've worked for all your life and two generations before is, doesn't matter? If you really want to move dirt, then do a levee around Waterbury.
The state could use eminent domain to force the project forward over the Harvey's objections. But Ben Rose with Vermont Emergency Management says the state decided not to do so in this case.
I think we're aware it's an option, but it's, you know, it's a fairly drastic move, which can often have a lot of unintended consequences or collateral damage.
Most flood mitigation projects in the state need some sort of buy-in from property owners. Conservation organizations like Vermont Natural Resources Council prioritize projects where the landowner is willing to participate. Karina Daly is a restoration ecologist at VNRC.
We certainly have projects that are top of our list from a floodplain protection priority, but don't have a willing landowner. And those are projects that we simply can't put our energy towards and move on just because there are so many projects to get done.
Vermont law allows the state to take property for, quote, flood control projects if the landowner is compensated. But eminent domain in Vermont has primarily been used for roads and public utility projects and not flood mitigation. That could change as scientists predict Vermont will see more rain and floods in the future. Oates, the former state hazard mitigation officer, says the state should look at eminent domain as a potential tool.
There's no time like right now after a state has experienced significant flooding to look at like all of the tools in the toolbox, like what is available to us to become more prepared for the next flood that we know is coming.
In a written statement, a spokesperson for the Department of Environmental Conservation said DEC doesn't have any plans to use eminent domain and will focus on voluntary buyouts.
Do is knock down this house, buy me out, and I'll put up a houseboat. Just put it on pylons, and if it floods again, I'll just go up and down. Those houseboats are rad, too.
On a recent afternoon, I met up with Brian Kravitz at his home on Randall Street in Waterbury. Tropical storm Irene decimated his house 12 years ago.
Okay, so Irene, the water line for Irene was about up here. So we had 3.5 feet on the first floor.
It cost him more than $220,000 to rebuild.
Which a lot of stuff I had to put on credit card. Which I literally just dug out from.
His house flooded again this summer, not as severely, but it still cost $55,000 to repair the damage. Kravitz was not critical of the Harveys, but he says any amount of flood reduction in town would help.
If it's going to happen more often, and even if you can reduce the water coming into the basements by a foot or a foot and a half, it really is a lot. It could mean not having to replace everything.
Though the Harveys have refused to participate in the floodplain project, they're not currently using the land to train horses.
Do you plan to get more horses?
It doesn't matter. If I just want to grow petunias, it's not anybody's business. Why do I have to justify what we're doing here?
Waterbury town officials say they reached out to the Harveys recently to see if they changed their mind. They had not. For Vermont Public, I'm Liam Elder Connors.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Howard Weiss-Tisman, Abigail Giles, and Adia Golston. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.